Vicky Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter. This program is designed for English learners. So we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today, Katie Weaver presents this week's Everyday Grammar Report. She discusses a letter from a listener describing their birthday. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of Bill Clinton. But first, here is John Russell.
The United Nations has said China carried out serious human rights violations that may be considered crimes against humanity. The accusation came in a newly published report examining the treatment of Uyghurs and other mostly Muslim ethnic groups. The groups live in the country's far western Xinjiang area. China immediately denounced the report, calling it false information created by Western nations. For several years, human rights groups have accused China of detaining millions of Uyghurs in a severe extrajudicial campaign against extremism. The report from the UN Human Rights Office largely confirmed earlier reporting by researchers, activists, and the news media. But it is not clear what impact the report might have. Among Uyghurs who have fled overseas, there was a sense of satisfaction that the report was published. There had been concerns that it would never be released. The report is a strong indictment of China's crimes against humanity, said Rehan Asat. She is a Uyghur lawyer whose brother is imprisoned in Xinjiang. For years, the Chinese government has said the Uyghurs are terrorists. Now we can point to them and say, you're the terrorists. Human rights groups worldwide and the governments of Japan and Germany also welcomed the report. The assessment found that China has carried out serious human rights violations under its anti-terrorism and anti-extremism policies. It called for urgent attention from the UN, the international community, and China itself to deal with the violations. Human rights groups repeated their calls for the UN Human Rights Council to set up an independent international body to investigate the reported abuses. The group is set to meet next month. Chinese officials continue to deny the accusations, saying the report is a political effort to criticize China. The assessment is a patchwork of false information that serves as political tools for the U.S. and other Western countries to strategically use Xinjiang to contain China, a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said. The report's findings were based on talks with former detainees and others familiar with conditions at 8 detention centers. The report said that descriptions of the detentions were marked by signs of torture and other cruel and inhumane treatment. It said that accusations of rape and other sexual violence appeared believable. The report did not use the term genocide. Some countries, including the United States, have used the term to describe China's policies in Xinjiang in recent years. The UN Rights Office said it could not confirm estimates that 1 million or more people were detained in internment camps in Xinjiang. But the office said it was reasonable to conclude that a huge number of arbitrary detentions took place in Xinjiang between at least 2017 and 2019. China has closed many of the camps, which the government called job training and education centers. However, hundreds of thousands of people continue to be held in prison, many on unclear, secret charges. The report called on China to release all individuals who were arbitrarily detained, to explain their whereabouts, and to inform their families who are seeking information about them. Japan, which has recently become more critical of China's actions in Xinjiang, was one of the first foreign governments to comment on the report. Japan is highly concerned about human rights conditions in Xinjiang, and we believe that it is important that universal values such as freedom, basic human rights, and rule of law are also guaranteed in China, Chief Cabinet Secretary Hirokazu Matsuno said. A German foreign ministry statement also welcomed the report, saying it confirms there is cause for the greatest concern. Human Rights Watch said the report supports additional UN action to establish accountability for the abuses. Never has it been so important for the UN system to stand up to Beijing and to stand with victims, said John Fisher, the deputy director at the group. There had been concerns the report would not be released. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet said she had to resist pressure both to publish and not publish. The report was released just minutes before Bachelet's time as leader officially ended. She announced in June that the report would be released by the end of her four-year term on August 31st. I'm John Russell.
Recently, our readers and listeners wrote many lovely messages about their birthdays. We have been reading all of them. Most messages are happy. You wrote about gifts you received, the people who celebrated with you, or where and how you celebrated. Some messages seemed sad. Some of you do not get to celebrate your birthdays. Other messages were a mix of sad and happy. In this week's Everyday Grammar, we are looking at Farhana's message about her birthday. She wrote, "My birthday was on last 23 March. This was my 27th birthday. In my birthday, no one wished me except my younger sister. And actually, there was no device for this day. I spent my whole day as like it is a normal day. Sometimes I felt sad, and sometimes I wasn't." Let us start at the beginning. Farhana writes, "My birthday was on last 23 March. We suggest changing this sentence to the present tense to say when your birthday is. My birthday is March 23rd. In American English, the usual order for dates is month, day, year. So instead of 23 March, Americans usually say March 23rd. You used the past tense in this sentence. This was my 27th birthday. Another way we can say how old we are is to use the past tense of the verb turn. I turned 27 this year. Here, turn means to reach or pass into a new age. Next, Farhana wrote this. In my birthday, no one wished me except my younger sister. We can change the word order of this sentence to make it clearer. No one wished me happy birthday, except my younger sister. Instead of a prepositional phrase, in my birthday, we can just start the sentence with no one. No one is an indefinite pronoun, meaning no person. You could also use the pronoun nobody. On to the next sentence. And actually, there was no devise for this day. Devise is a verb meaning to plan or think up something. You were close. But in this sentence, we need a noun. And we find it in the definition of devise, plan. Actually, there was no plan for the day. If you wanted to use the word devise, however, you could. It would come right after plan in the sentence. Actually, there was no plan devised for the day. Farhana's next sentence is, I spent my whole day as like it is a normal day. We should make a few changes to this sentence. As and like are both used to make comparisons between nouns. As is an adverb and like is a preposition. We only need one of these to make the comparison. We can say, I spent my whole day like it was a normal day. Let us look now at Farhana's last sentence. Sometimes I felt sad, and sometimes I wasn't. We suggest changing this sentence to, Sometimes I felt sad, but other times I didn't. Now the two parts of the sentence agree in verb use. Also, we always capitalize the pronoun I in sentences. We used the conjunction but with other times only to create more contrast. It is also correct to write, Sometimes I felt sad, and sometimes I didn't. Now, let's hear the revised message about Farhana's birthday. My birthday is March 23rd. I turned 27 this year. No one wished me happy birthday, except my younger sister. Actually, there was no plan for the day. I spent my whole day like it was a normal day. Sometimes I felt sad, but other times I didn't. Thank you, Farhana, for your message. We would like to wish you a happy birthday early for next year when you turn 28. We hope you enjoy the day. If you would like to receive advice on American English, write us a short message of 5 to 8 sentences about your favorite character from a book. You can describe what the character looks like, their thoughts, actions, what they say, or what other characters think of them. You can also talk about why you like the character. Send your writing to our email address, learningenglish@voanews.com. Maybe we will choose your message for a future Everyday Grammar. I'm Katie Weaver.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Jefferson Clinton, better known as Bill Clinton. Clinton took office in 1993 and was re-elected in 1996. In many ways, historians consider his time in office a success. The economy expanded, and the country was largely at peace. But Clinton had some notable failures, too. He could not persuade Congress to accept a plan to reform the nation's health care system. And, in his second term, the House of Representatives took steps to remove him from office. But the Senate decided not to act. Clinton finished his second term with high approval ratings. Yet, he is also remembered for being only the second U.S. president to be impeached. Bill Clinton came from a town with a memorable name, Hope. He grew up there and in another nearby town in the southern state of Arkansas. For most of his early life, Bill was raised by his grandmother and his mother, both nurses. His father had died in a car accident before he was born. People who knew Bill as a young man remember him as very intelligent, charming with people, and talented in music. His mother told him he would be president one day. Sure enough, Clinton pursued activities that would lead to a political career. He attended college at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., where he studied international affairs, led student government groups, and took a position as a clerk in the U.S. Senate. He went on to study at Oxford University in England on a prestigious Rhodes Scholarship. Then he graduated from law school at Yale University. There, he met another student who would be his wife, Hillary Rodham. The two went on to have one child together, a daughter named Chelsea. After finishing his studies, Clinton returned to his home state of Arkansas and pursued political office. At 32, he became one of the youngest governors ever in the country. 2 years later, he was voted out of office, and, as historian Russell Riley notes, he became the youngest former governor. And that is how a good deal of Clinton's political career continued, in a pattern of successes and failures. His successes often came as a result of his centrist policies, which appealed to people of different political beliefs. He also was an effective public speaker and, to many, a likable, charismatic person who seemed to care deeply about others. But, his critics pointed out, Clinton also appeared to make many decisions simply for political advantage. And he sometimes tried to please so many people that he pleased no one. Following a series of increasingly national roles, as well as a series of setbacks, Clinton campaigned for president in 1992. At first, he did not do well in the campaign. He was young and not well known. He also suffered from reports that he had relationships with women who were not his wife. But in time, Clinton began winning primary contests. Reporters called him the comeback kid. He earned a public image as a politician who could survive problems. In the general election, Clinton competed against the sitting president, Republican George H.W. Bush. The two men also faced an unusually strong third-party candidate named Ross Perot. On election night, Clinton prevailed. Because Americans had split their votes among three major candidates, Clinton earned less than 50% of the popular vote. But he won enough electoral votes to become the next U.S. president. The people who worked on Bill Clinton's presidential campaign adopted an informal motto. They said, "It's the economy, stupid." In other words, campaign officials believed that most Americans cared primarily about how a president's policies would affect their financial concerns. So President Clinton quickly set about making a series of economic changes. They included raising taxes on wealthier Americans and cutting spending to help poorer Americans. In a few years, the U.S. budget deficit was gone, the federal government had a surplus, and the country's financial situation was strong and healthy, although not everyone approved of the steps Clinton took to get there or believed he should get all the credit. Early in his first term, Clinton sought an additional reform he believed would help voters' financial concerns: affordable health insurance for all Americans. Most people in the U.S. either bought private health insurance or did not have any insurance to help pay for medical costs. Clinton wanted to find a way for the U.S. government to support Americans' health-related expenses. He appointed his wife, First Lady Hillary Clinton, to lead a health care reform effort. Hillary Clinton, a lawyer, had led a similar effort to reform education in Arkansas when her husband was governor there. But some lawmakers in Congress, as well as some voters, rejected her efforts. The reform effort failed. Clinton also struggled in some early foreign policy moves. He withdrew American troops from Somalia after their humanitarian efforts there turned into a bloody military struggle. He was also criticized for failing to intervene quickly in the genocide in Rwanda, where hundreds of thousands of people were killed. Later, Clinton won praise for some of his foreign policy. His government helped restore the elected president in Haiti after a coup. It also helped negotiate peace agreements in Bosnia and Ireland. And it cooperated with NATO to intervene in the Kosovo area and stop attacks on Albanians there. In general, Clinton believed the U.S. had an important role to play in maintaining peace and protecting human life around the world. At the same time, he did not want to use too many American resources to do so. He aimed to cooperate with other nations and to set moderate goals. As usual, Clinton adopted an approach that was not too extreme on one side or another. During most of his time as president, Clinton had been under investigation. Federal judges had appointed a special counsel named Kenneth Starr to find out if the president had committed any crimes related to financial investments before he took office. During the investigation, Starr learned that the president had been having a sexual relationship with a young woman who worked in the White House. Starr asked Clinton about the affair under oath. Later, Starr accused Clinton of lying about his relationship with the woman. Starr said that Clinton had also tried to prevent others from telling the truth about some of his activities. In time, the president publicly admitted the relationship, and he apologized to voters and his family. But he said he had not lied or told anyone else to lie for him. Lawmakers in the House of Representatives did not accept Clinton's defense. They advanced two articles of impeachment. Lawmakers in the U.S. Senate then considered the case. It is their job to examine the evidence and decide whether to remove a president from office. A majority did not believe the actions Clinton was accused of were serious violations against the country. They voted to acquit Clinton of the charges and permit him to continue as president. In the U.S., a president can serve only two full terms. After his second, Bill Clinton and his wife settled in a town outside New York City. In time, Hillary Clinton became the U.S. Senator from New York, as well as a Secretary of State and the Democratic Party's candidate for president. Bill Clinton, like many other U.S. presidents, wrote about his experiences and helped develop his presidential library. He also worked on humanitarian, health, and economic issues with his family's organization, the Clinton Foundation. For many, Clinton's time in office is remembered as a mixed experience. The economy was at one of its strongest in U.S. history. Most people could find jobs, and many Americans bought homes for the first time. In the mid-1990s especially, the Internet and other new developments created a technology boom. In addition, Clinton was an effective public speaker, and he inspired new groups of people to support his Democratic Party. Many voters approved of his appointments of women and minorities to positions of power in his government. They also liked the steps he took to reduce the use of handguns, protect the environment, and provide paid time off work for some people to care for themselves or their families. But both Democrats and Republicans found fault with some of Clinton's efforts. And even his supporters note that the president had to spend much of his time in office answering charges of wrongdoing. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another Learning English program on the Voice of America.